Hello there, and welcome to the Workplace Communication Podcast, a podcast dedicated to leaders who want to elevate team performance by refining leadership communication skills. And now, let's dive right in with your host, Lindsay LaPaquette.
So welcome back once again to the Workplace Communication Podcast. This is your host, Lindsay LaPaquette. And today I'm really excited to introduce you to Michelle Cederberg, who's going to be talking to us about how to regain focus, recharge your life, and really get stuff done, which is based on the subtitle of her new book that's coming out shortly, The Success Energy Equation. So Michelle, thanks for joining us here today.
Thanks for having me, Lindsay.
So Michelle is an in-demand coach, consultant, author, and certified speaking professional. She believes that personal and professional success is directly influenced by how well we harness the physical, mental, and emotional capacity we each have within us. She helps people boost that capacity so they gain clarity, build confidence, and create the discipline to do the frickin' work. Her new book, The Success Energy Equation, How to Regain Focus, Recharge Your Life, and Really Get Stuff Done, or something close, go check out the subtitle on Amazon, shares that very message. So Michelle, I've taken a look at this book and I loved it from the very first pages that I was reading. And one of the things that stood out to me was how you talked about how we perceive success, or the equation towards getting to success, as having the dream and doing the hard work. And in your book, you kind of demystify that this isn't quite enough to really get you towards your dream. So I'd love to hear a little bit about where this idea came from, how you came to realizing that this conceptualization is not the full portrait.
Yeah, that's a great question. The dream times hard work equals success. We all hope that it's that simple. And I do believe that every single one of us has within us this drive, this best intentions to do better in everything that we do. And so we look at the goal and we say, yes, I can do this. I just got to do the hard work. But when we really, you know, when we really look closely at it, or rather when we add in the stressors of life, that's when that equation becomes far too simple. And, you know, we realize there's other things that are getting in my way. There's my own mindset that's getting in my way. There's all the other things that I'm juggling that make that drive towards that big dream just a little bit harder to get to. And how can we navigate that differently?
Mm-hmm. And I see where, you know, when people are struggling, so once the dream is solid or somewhat solid, let's say, once people are struggling to get towards it, that message of, well, you just need to work harder is pretty common in our society. And I feel a lot of resistance to it often because, like you say, it's not as simple as that. So can you talk to me a bit about what success energy is and about your equation, how the different factors that truly lead someone to success?
Yeah. And, you know, you kind of suggested it there. When we set that goal and it doesn't come to fruition in the ways that we want it to, or it doesn't come quickly enough, the first thing we'll do is we'll blame ourselves. I'm not working hard enough. I'm not good enough. I'm not smart enough. And that in and of itself can be a barrier. So that's one of the factors. I talk about success energy. The success energy equation is setting goals that you're, you know, that you love, having the belief in yourself to accomplish those goals, and then having the discipline, as you said earlier, to do the freaking work. If we just did those three things, it is the dream times hard work equals success, but it's factoring in our belief in ourselves to accomplish that goal and, you know, the let's do the work. And then the fourth factor, which is kind of the, what I call the magic multiplier of success, is how we use our energy physically, mentally, emotionally, and cognitively to improve those other three factors. So, you know, to give us more energy to set bigger goals, to give us more emotional wellness so that we feel better about ourselves and our ability to crush those goals, and to give us more physical and mental and emotional energy so we have the discipline to keep doing the work even when we don't want to.
Mm-hmm. And as I was reading your book, the reflections I was having was that energy really is a big core piece to it. I think especially now with the particular stress everyone is under nowadays, but just in general, is that if that energy management is not done well, then everything else is more challenging. You know, your ability to believe in yourself sort of dips. You get frustrated more easily. You don't have the same discipline. You don't believe in your dream maybe as much. Before we go on, I just want to read a real quick quote from your book, because this stood out to me as I just want to give you a taste of what, not you, of course, Michelle, but the listeners, a taste of what is in this book. So Michelle writes, "Here's my pragmatist version of the formula for success, and admittedly a scenario that has played out in my own life more than once. See if you can relate. That equation, the dream times hard work equals success, looks more like this. The dream times gaining skill plus knowledge times hard work equals success. Then divide that by days grinding it out minus time spent on distractions, but add to that persistence, passion, and focus. Then subtract sleep, which equals no energy, to the power of fast food and not exercising, plus patience to the power of caffeine and anxiety meds, and multiply all that by days spent in self-doubt. That equals stalling. Then you add in an injection of confidence from watching someone else fall on their face." And it goes on. I had to read that because I related to it so much reading it. And I think we all can.
Yeah, that, you know, and I, when I present in person, which I haven't been able to do for a while now, as you can attest to that, I share that pragmatist version of success just to let people really just give themselves a big old break, because it's not meant to be easy. And some days it's a lot harder than it should be. And the road to success is not necessarily a straight line. And as long as we're aware that it's not easy, we can then arm ourselves with the right tools and knowledge to help navigate that stress. And that's what the simpler version of the success energy equation is all about.
Mm. And part of what I got from reading your book was that it's about identifying where the breakdown is, I guess, right? In the equation for you in that moment to be able to focus on the right thing to bring you forward. And you talk a lot about stress, and you talk about 21st and a quarter century stress. So can you start off by telling people what you mean by this?
The name even is stressful. I talk a lot about stress in my presentations for organizations. And, you know, we talk about two types of stress, acute stress and chronic stress. And acute stress is stress with adequate recovery, which is essentially normal stress. We're all going to have that. You have a tough day and you get some good sleep and some exercise and some good food. Or you have a tough meeting and you give yourself a coffee break, or you go for a walk and you allow your body to have a little bit of recovery. Chronic stress is stress without recovery. And that's when we have those tough days or those tough meetings and we just keep going and going and going, despite our mind and body telling us, I need a break. So 21st and a quarter century stress is this tech-driven, FOMO-fed, 24/7 stress that's coming at us from our devices and from the 24-hour news cycle and from push notifications and from my need to check in with social or my need to respond right away to that email or that text, everything that is coming at us from that outside world. And we get a little bit more of that these days, I think, especially because, many of us are working from home. Many of us are connected to our colleagues and even our family members via technology these days. So we haven't been getting a break from it. And so not only does our body not get a chance to recover from the toughness of the day, but our mind is also just completely bombarded. And we get to the end of the day going, well, like, I don't know what to do with myself. We lack focus. We lack drive towards doing the things that are most important to us. Mm-hmm. 21st and a quarter century stress.
It really is, because I think back, I graduated maybe 15, 16 years ago. And in those days, and I can't believe I'm old enough to say in those days, but in those days, I had a work email address and you couldn't access that from home. You weren't allowed to, and so that distinction was there. And when I would go camping, I didn't have a cell phone. But even into the years when people did have cell phones, I was a late adopter of cell phones, but there was no network, even as smartphones came out. And now when I go camping, not only is it very rare to not have a network, but I won't book based on networks, but I am, it's in my head, right? Well, ooh, is this an okay period to be gone without a network, which is not okay, because you need to disconnect from that, but society and life has been built up to make it really hard disconnect.
I write a lot about it in the Success Energy Equation about digital distraction and the impact of our digital devices on our focus, on our relationships, on our overall personal contentment, because we just don't get a break from all that information that's being fed to us. I can remember, like you, going backcountry skiing in the middle of nowhere and almost feeling the sense of relief that I can't check in.
Right.
And now, like you're saying, all of the backcountry huts are, you know, Wi-Fi connected. So you get to the end of your ski day and everybody is sitting, you know, in the corner of the lodge by the fire with their hot toddy posting to their, you know, to Instagram.
And I will admit, so we winter camp every Christmas and there is no, it's in these really rustic cabins. So it's, you know, camping, but we have heat, but no toilets. It's really awesome. Ski out. And there's no network. But if you go stand in one little spot in the park. Right.
Yes.
And of course, we have found that spot, right? We go there every year and we find that spot. And so although I don't spend my entire trip, it still really helps me disconnect. But most years, I'm not able to retain the impulse of going to that spot once a day just to check in and see what's going on.
And, you know, the fact that you're giving yourself that break away where it's the one part of the day for one spot in that's not the worst thing in the world.
Right.
I think that in our day-to-day lives, we just need to be aware of how our technology and the pace of life is impacting our here and now. And, you know, I talk a lot about autopilot in the book because when we get busy, we tend to run through our day on autopilot, you know, unconsciously driving through the day, doing things that aren't necessarily in alignment with how we want to be. And so that's the bigger deal. Like right here, right now, as you're, you know, navigating your day, how many other things are you thinking about after you finish listening to the podcast? And are you doing other things while you're listening to the podcast? and most of us are. I'm a, you know, multitasker when I listen to podcasts. And, you know, what would happen if I'll sit in front of the TV with my phone in my hand. So what would happen if I just allowed myself to do a little less of that so I could get more present to what's happening right here and right now.
Mm-hmm. I think what happens is we feel our feelings.
Yeah.
We slow down.
Yeah. We feel our feelings, or we feel our lack of getting stuff done, or we feel our, you know, exactly. Which I think can be a good thing. I'm a professional coach as well. So I spend a lot of time with people, you know, asking them what I call the big little question in the book. What do you want? Like, what do you want from your life? And I call it the big little question because it seems so simple, but when people stop and think about it, you know, even for me, I'm like, what do I want? Like, times have changed. I want to get back to speaking in person. Well, what if that doesn't happen? I don't know what I want to, you know, what's next? What do I want? So when we ask ourselves that question, we might be sitting there feeling the discomfort of that, you know? And so, how do I push away that discomfort? I pick up my phone and get a little endorphin hit, a little dopamine hit. Yeah.
Yeah. So a couple lines that stood out from your book, it was when you wrote, scrolling other people's lives instead of living our own and nurturing our online lives for an audience. Because I felt that was really reflective of...
And nurturing your online lives for an audience of pseudo friends, you know?
Yes. That was the line. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. That really stood out to me because... I think, again, going back to that autopilot, right? Is that what we're consciously, it's a balance I feel I walk in my life all the time, right? My social media presence versus how much that pulls me away from being present with my own family. And it's a tightrope sometimes.
It is a tightrope. And especially if you're self-employed as you and I both are, and trying to, you know, and public figures, if you will, trying to get our message out there so we can, you know, keep getting paid for what we do, et cetera, et cetera. And trying to find that balance, I think, is a problem that many, many people struggle through. I'd be interested to know how many of your listeners, you know, if I could say, hey, hands up if you, I would bet that most of you are feeling the feels on that one as well. Mm. And I think that the important thing is to recognize when it becomes an issue. And, you know, I'm attached to my device, as many people are, and I'm attached to my Instagram and my social. I'm promoting the book right now, and so I haven't had much break from it, and I can't. At the same time, it's those in-between times when you say to yourself, look, all right, what can I do in small ways? I'm not saying we have to get rid of the devices because they're here to stay, but what are some small things I can do? Can I just give myself a break from 8 p.m. onward? Can I go, you know, device free one day a week? Can I, you know, give Sundays entirely to my family and post my Instagram on Monday morning? You know, like, can I, you know, can I block it out so there's no devices at the dinner table or those types of things? We turn them off when you're in meetings. Don't take them when you go have coffee with your friends. You know, we might think, oh, I'm going to twitch because of that. But sometimes it's just a nice relief to know that, well, I don't have my phone, so I can't respond. Mm-hmm. There are other ways of connecting.
I think it helps us take us off that autopilot, because I do see, so when you were saying about sitting in front of the TV with your phone, so I have a pretty strong rule in our house with the kids that you are not allowed to be on two devices at the same time.
I love that.
Although then I will sometimes sit in front of the TV. And so I try to model it, right? When I catch myself, it's usually if we're watching a movie I'm not actually really interested in. And then I find myself bored and scrolling, right? And then I'm like, I can't model this to my children who I am telling they're not allowed to do this. But it just becomes this habit, right? I'm not consciously deciding, oh, I'm going to do this instead. I'm going to tell them I don't want to watch the movie and I'm going to go elsewhere and do this. It's an automatic reflex. And so I find that when, usually I don't keep my phone with me in front of the TV, but when it's with me, it's just that automatic, you know, and
it's,
I have to consciously stop myself.
It's a reflex, because when we reach for that device, it actually releases dopamine in our brain, which gives us this feeling of calm and contentment. So one thing you said just a moment ago, I don't bring it with me. That's the best thing that we can do. I discovered another little trick. I'm a Schitt's Creek fan, and I just finished watching the sixth season on CBC Gem, but I have a Samsung phone and a Samsung TV, so I could cast from my phone to my TV. So as long as it's casting from my phone, I can't use my phone.
Right.
So I discovered that. But I love the idea of just leaving the devices elsewhere and just being fully present. It drives my husband crazy when we're watching a show together and I'm also looking down at my phone. He's like, are you even paying attention? I'm like, yes, but I'm really not. Sort of. But, you know, we talk about workplace communication in this podcast. You know, that's family communication in a way. You're basically communicating, you know, how you feel about the time together. So I'm not 100% in it with my husband watching the program, or I'm not 100% modeling how I, you know, communicating how I want things to be for my children, whatever it might be, right? Mm-hmm.
Well, and I think a lot of the behaviors that we exhibit in the home are reflective of the behaviors we exhibit in the workplace. And we may couch
them.
The
two of them
are
overlapping for so many.
Yeah. And we may be a little more careful in what we do in the workplace, of course, because, you know, there's not maybe as much tolerance as at home. But I think we've all had that experience of speaking to somebody at work who's also writing off an email, you know, as we're talking to them, and the experience is not one of being heard, or at least in my experience, it's not one of being heard. And I think that's true in any context, right? Whether you're with a family, with your friends, when somebody is multitasking, we don't feel fully connected to them. And I think there's big repercussions.
Yeah. You know, if your kids come in from outdoors and you say hello as you're scrolling through your phone, it's a really disingenuous greeting. And I like, you know, that they feel the difference if you are head up, eyes open, making eye contact, great big smile. And for that instant, you're giving them 100% of your love and attention.
Yeah.
Kids are intuitive. So are pets, and dogs will teach you. My dog, she's only 6 months old, but she's already figured out that when you're in that thing, you are not as present with me. And she will ask for unfocused or focused time where you look at me and you give me your scritches. It's fascinating.
That's fascinating. That is very
interesting. Kids and pets will teach us a lot about how we need to be in the world, because they're highly intuitive, even at their young age, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And I think the message for those listening, you know, on a leadership level is that the importance of taking the time to give that attention when you're speaking to people on your team, I think it has a huge, huge impact on, you know, how people are going to end up being open to what you're saying. Because when you're telling somebody, asking somebody to do something and only half paying attention to them, generally it does not leave the person feeling motivated and inspired to jump on board and do what we want.
I remember years ago, I was teaching at Mountain Road College here in Calgary, where I live, when it was a college, and I was a new sessional instructor, and I was going down the hallway and I passed my friend Joe's office, and I popped my head in. I was like, "Hey, Joe, how you doing?" And he was facing his computer, and he stopped. You could see his shoulders kind of slump, and then he turned in his chair, rotated towards me, and he says, "You know, Michelle, my day is so busy, I don't think I'm going to get through everything. And so I just decided early on that I would just do what I can and be in the moment." And here was this guy who I had just interrupted in the midst of his crazy day, and he stopped and he gave me his full attention. And I just felt so blessed in that moment. I thought, oh my gosh, I just love him even more. I felt so seen and heard, despite the fact that he was so busy. He could have just kept talking to me with his back turned, like, busy day, you know, crazy, you know, hope you're doing well. And I would have just kept on going. But instead, he stopped and he gave me his full attention. I walked out of that office feeling so important. Now, imagine if you're leading a team and you do that instead of what the instinct, the impulse might be, is like, yeah, I'm doing good, busy, back turned. That those little interactions are going to create teams that are really working for you instead of, you know, feeling that, he doesn't really care about me.
Yeah. And I think those moments of connection can be brief. You know, it doesn't have to be a half hour conversation.
Yeah, no, this was the, you know, 90 second interaction that left me feeling really important.
Yeah. Yeah. It's when we're out in town, it's important to me to, you know, look up and smile at people walking by. And it drives my kids nuts. They're always saying to me, "Mommy, why are you always looking at everybody walking past us and saying hi?" But I think that brief moment of connection of just making eye contact and smiling and saying hi is an important point of contact for people in their day.
It's so important nowadays because we're hiding behind our masks and there's fear and uncertainty in the world. And, you know, I have a thing, head up, eyes open, same as you. Like when I'm out in the world, like head up, eyes open. When you're, you know, we're both presenters. When I finish a presentation, you know, I'll turn, you know, I'll say, "I'm going to be here. Come ask questions, head up, eyes open. I want to make eye contact. I don't want to be putting my computer away and fussing with other stuff while somebody's trying to have a conversation."
Right.
If I'm out walking my dog, head up, eyes open, make eye contact, smile. It could be the only kind of moment of joy that somebody gets in a day, you know, when so many people are out there feeling anger and frustration and putting that out to the world. So yeah, I say amen to head up, eyes open.
I like your way of saying that. So one thing I want to get into more is you talk in your book about energy management. And I loved the way you framed it. This is something I've been aware of in my own life for several years, something I still work on. But can you talk to me about what you mean by energy management?
You know, yes. And, you know, when we're busy, we will constantly tell ourselves, "I just don't have the time. I just don't have the time. I just don't have the time." Well, you don't have the time. You never have enough time. There's only 24 hours in a day. You can't make more minutes. You can't create new hours. But we always have, you know, energy as a renewable resource within us, physically, mentally, emotionally, if we choose to tap into it. You know, my background is as a kinesiologist. And so I taught at the phys ed at the college level. I was a personal trainer for many, many years and I'm a certified exercise physiologist. So for me, I put high stakes in physical health for personal and professional growth. I think of it as a foundation because everything that we do is coming from this physical body and the brilliant mind in it. And yet we just let it kind of operate behind the scenes and we take it for granted. And you might be sitting at your desk listening to this podcast or multitasking in your kitchen, listening to this podcast today saying, "Yes, I don't take care of myself the way I should, but I'm experiencing reasonable levels of success." And I will say that you can experience high levels of success if you don't take care of your health the way that you could. But imagine how much higher your success would be if you would. And I also say that you can experience high levels of success without taking care of your health. But at some point, the physical body and your brilliant mind in it are going to say, "Are you kidding me with this program? I need a little bit more of your care and attention." And I talk about it in small steps. Exercise to boost emotional wellness, to make you feel better about yourself, to give you higher self-esteem and self-efficacy. That's your belief in your ability to accomplish stuff. Exercise to help give you more clarity and mental focus, and also to just boost your cognitive capacity, your attention span and creativity and critical thinking and problem solving. We take it for granted, but even small opportunities to just, you know, move a little bit more or eat a little bit more healthfully or drink a little bit more water or improve our sleep just a little bit, pay back in big dividends in how we, you know, interact with the world. emotionally, mentally, cognitively, spiritually, even socially. And so I love when people kind of get that, oh my gosh, if I just take care of myself in small steps, that you feel that. So that's energy management.
Yeah. And I think too, so in my experience, I see everything you've just described there is absolutely the foundation. And I've seen in my life too, that part of my energy management comes from the decisions I make in my life and who I choose to spend my time with. And so started realizing which interactions really drained me, which gave me energy, which activities energized me and which drained me. And that has shifted over my life. You know, even when I look at my workouts, things that I used to love doing, I used to love being at the gym and lifting weights, and that gave me, you know, that was my energy boosting thing. And then I started to not enjoy that. And I had to find a different physical activity that replenished me instead of feeling like a should and draining my energy.
I love that. Yeah. And so when you raise a good point, because for me, the first part of energy management is taking care of your physical energy, but we also gain a great deal of energy through people, how we interact with people. So your connections, we'll get a lot of good, bad, and neutral energy from the people we interact with. So we decide that, you know, this friend is no longer making me feel good. I need to spend less time with them, or I really need to find more ways to connect more meaningfully with my family. And every time we do that, we get a release in, you know, positive hormones in our body, oxytocin and dopamine and serotonin, that help us feel, you know, happy hormones, if you will. Mm. And then how we recharge, you know, how we take care of ourselves after the work, whether it's sleep or whether it's taking breaks or whether it's, finding those leisure things that we love to do that we've been putting off, or in your case, the things that we stop doing because they're no longer fulfilling us. And, you know, if we listen carefully to our mind and body, it will tell us what we need, but we're so busy doing and stuck on autopilot, sometimes we just miss the cues.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think too, my experience has been that in time, so again, getting back to that real foundation of, you know, sleep and exercise and all that, when I let that slip, that's when I start to let the rest slip, because it's harder for me to set limits and say no when I'm tired, when I'm not eating well, when I'm not working out and getting the exercise I need. And so I really do see that as the foundation of the rest of the energy management.
And you know, I'm in agreement with you on the sleep factor too, because many people take that for granted. You know, I don't know when it became a luxury, but it's something that many people are fitting in, quote unquote, when they have time. And that's not how our bodies work. you know, and I, you know, I got a new puppy in June, and, you know, I've been sleep deprived. I don't have kids. I have dog. And, I really noticed how that change in my sleep patterns, you know, God love all you new parents and old out there, like, holy cow, I don't know how you do it for as long as you do. She's now sleeping through the night, but I'm still sleep deprived. You know what I mean? Yeah. And it does, it affects your decision-making. It affects how I interact with my husband. It affects all of those things that you just mentioned.
Yeah. It was one of the things reading the book. I actually turned to my husband as I was reading it and said, okay, this is enough. We need to start going to bed earlier, because we've just gotten into this pattern as the kids have gotten older and they've stayed up later. I just want some time alone, you know? So once they're in bed, I want just an hour to myself. But some nights they stay up really late. And last night I said to him, oh, I think we have to start going to bed before the kids, because what I see in my energy is Monday, you know, my focus at work, Monday, Tuesday, pretty good. Wednesday's not too bad. By Friday, I'm having a hard time focusing. And I usually sleep in on the weekends to catch up, but it affects how much I can get done during the week. The fact that I'm not prioritizing that better during the week. So
that's an intuitive hit that you got that says, oh my gosh, I need more sleep and we need to do things differently. And those are the kinds of things that I want your listeners and my readers of the book to kind of tap into. It's like, wait, there was that hit. What am I going to do with that? And it might mean that the hour to yourself happens in your bed with a book.
And headphones,
you know, just to give yourself that space. Right. Yeah. And you know, those are the hits that I want people to get. It's like, all right, what am I going to do with this now that I've had this? Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And so something else I just want to touch on quickly is, because I thought this was really interesting too, is you talked about the motivation matrix. So can you share a little bit about that when, you know, people are looking at how to be, you know, quote unquote, more motivated?
Yeah. The motivation matrix, it's quite funny. It came to me while I was writing the book, and that's often the case. You know, you start to get your ideas out and all of a sudden you start to see the patterns. I believe that we have four different kind of motivation types within us that will drive how we get certain tasks done. And I chart the matrix on, you know, one axis is your belief in yourself and your ability to, or your belief in yourself and the task that you're going after. And on the other matrix, it's the discipline you have within you to do the work. And so the four that I have are your dreamer, driver, grinder, and seeker. So the grinder or the dreamer is the high belief in self, but low discipline to do the work. So you've got that thing that you want to do and you're not getting it done. You're dreaming about, oh, it'll be great when I can finally spend time on that. The grinder is the one that's got a low belief in self, but high discipline. And you might think, you know, so they despite the fact that they don't believe in themselves or the task, they'll dig in, they'll do the work. And I will put many kind of hardworking behind the scenes folks who just need to get the job done in that category. And I think it's honorable. My dad was a grinder. He was a faller. He cut down trees and he didn't like his job, but he got up and he did it every single day because he loved his family. So his belief was in another purpose. And then there's a seeker, which is low belief in self and low discipline in the task. We don't necessarily want to spend that much time there. And then the place that we want to spend the most time ultimately getting to is the driver, where we have high belief in ourselves and and what we're doing and high discipline to get stuff done. Now, you might be thinking, well, I'm all of those things. And if you're thinking that, you're absolutely right. Depending on what's in front of us, we could be the seeker. We could be, I don't want to do this and I don't have let it go. Or the things that we love to do, the driver things, when I'm in it, time passes, you know, hours pass like minutes and, you know, I'm fully in the zone. I'm fully, you know, focused, if you will. And so I think that part of what I wanted to get across with the motivation matrix is recognizing which tasks give you that driver energy and what's happening when you're in the lesser of those areas. In the chapter, I also list what could be happening. It could be that you have the wrong goals. It could be that you have to work on your energy management so you have energy to do the things. And so there's certain things that you can mine, if you will, to determine how do I get more of the driver type in the things that I want to do.
I like how you frame that, because as I was reading it, so I also felt like, oh, I've been here in my life and I've been, you know, in all the different quadrants. But I was looking at it in a, okay, like, is it more discipline or more belief? Where am I sitting? You know, but I like the way you frame it too, in terms of when you're in some of those other quadrants, maybe those are some of the activities. So for me, those are some of the things I ask my VA to do sometimes.
Absolutely.
Like when you talk about it in terms of energy management,
absolutely,
that came to me was there are some things that I will never have the discipline to do because I hate them so much. Yeah. That, and there are other options. I could decide to be a grinder, I suppose, and get it done. But I also have the option of asking someone who they're in the driver quadrant for those tasks.
Yes,
and do.
Yeah, 100%. And, you know, I learned early on in my self-employment career that I hate bookkeeping, not very good at it. So from the very start, I had a bookkeeper and I hired an accountant. The only thing I got to do is hand off my receipts. And I hated compiling my receipts. And then I realized, oh, I have an assistant that can do that. So like those are all off. I don't want to do them. I don't want to touch them. I email my assistant to say, come by and get the receipts. And that's it. So, and we don't always have the luxury to have somebody else to do it. And if that is the case, you know, in the case of my dad with not loving the work that he did for all the years that he did it, he was very good at reframing. You know, he got up every day and he did that because he loved his family, because he wanted to put a roof over our heads and because he wanted to be able to have the 5 acres that we lived on and to have his little hobby farm and to have those things to look forward to. So we can reframe as well if we haven't got the choices, but.
Yeah. And I think in a workplace context too, part of my experience has been that sometimes when somebody seems to be lacking discipline or lacking belief, sometimes it's actually a mismatch in their skills and talents. So,
Yes. You
know, I think that can also, from a leadership perspective, people can reflect on this in terms of where is there a mismatch between what people are doing? What do you need to do to bring them into that driver?
Yeah, I will often have conversations with coaching clients or audience members about that. What are the things that you love to do in the work that you're doing, and how can you do more of that? How can you negotiate to drive your strengths to where you really want to be putting your energy? Because that helps the organization, it helps you, and then everybody wins. As long as you have the courage to have those conversations, and you can say, well, it's on my job description. Well, everything is negotiable if you have the courage to ask.
Yeah, absolutely. So, Michelle, I'm curious, as I was reading the book, I'm curious how much of your own story is wrapped up in the book.
Yeah, I will often say that I am a student of all that I teach, and you know, much of what I write about is you know, it's based on 17 years of being in front of audiences, speaking the message out loud. And when I started speaking, I shared a lot of my own, you know, I wanted to learn about this because I was getting through it myself. And in learning it, I realized, oh, this is something that a lot of people struggle with. And so, you know, the imposter syndrome or low self-esteem, I struggled with that for many years. Having the wrong focus on my business and, you know, not being clear about what's super important to me, I struggled with that. And having the discipline to do the work when stuff got busy, and just trying to recognize how I would throw my health practices off of the table when I got really busy and realized that that's not a good idea. So I learned from that. And all of those things kind of started to wrap up into what is my philosophy, if you will, on setting goals and hopefully crushing them. And, you know, as a student, I'm still learning. And so writing the book was a little bit cathartic in that way as well. And I was learning right up until I sent that manuscript to my editor. You know, the last chapter talks about the aha moment that I had after leaving our annual speakers convention, where I'd finished writing the transcript and I had delivered it to the editor and then gone off to convention, where I had 4 days where I didn't think about it, where I was very much not on social media, where I was connecting with friends who I value and having conversations and laughing and, you know, having fun, which allowed my brain time to just de-stress and start to noodle on what I had left to my editor. And as I'm flying home from London, Ontario last December, I realized, I have to do a little bit more work. The clarity came. I realized I had inadvertently become my own case study, because I had been putting my energy management practices to the side. I had been working long hours. I had been digging in, and I was running on autopilot, all of the things that I was writing about over the last year and a half. And I went, isn't that interesting? Like, now what? And so, like, right up until the very end, I was being a student and learning. And so I wrote about it in chapter 10. And I went, wow. Went off to New Zealand for a month with my husband over Christmas and New Year, a trip that we'd been planning for a couple of years. And I had told my editor, I'll make the rewrites while I'm gone. But even as I was typing those words, I realized I wasn't going to do that. I needed that downtime to just get clear. And thankfully, that was my restoration. And I came back January 10th. And within 10 days, I'd done the rewrites. And, you know, away we went, and like, lessons learned. But wow, yes, I feel everything. If I'm experiencing it, I will somehow put it into the work that I'm doing, because more often than not, if I'm feeling it, other people are as well.
Yeah. Well, and I think it really resonates when you're reading from somebody who has lived it, right? Versus somebody who hasn't and is giving advice from.
Oh, I've fallen flat on my face so many times. I can't count. But you know, the key is I'll get up every single time and say, all right, what did I learn from that? And hopefully I can share some of that with my audiences and coaching clients and with your listeners, and have a little bit of fun along the way.
So I guess my last question to wrap things up here is, what is the one thing that people can be doing daily if they want to be driving their success energy? What's that, your top advice?
Gosh. In the book, I write about a 2-minute timeout, like to have at least a small moment in your day where you stop and you sit and you just be. And it can be meditating poorly. It can just be sitting and allowing the thoughts to come in and drive you crazy, because eventually it'll be less so. But I think that all of us need to stop and give ourselves that moment of pause just to be with whatever's here. Because when we do that, we might be saying, okay, I'm on the right track, or wow, am I retired today? Or geez, I didn't realize how much fatigue I was feeling from this, or geez, that project that I've been dragging behind me is really, I need to do something about that. That's when we get present to the mess. That's when we also get present to the success. And so just to, you know, 2 minute time out every single day, just to make it less if you need to, but to stop and ask yourself, what do I need right now? Like what's here right now? And it sounds kind of woo-woo, but it's not that at all. It's really just about getting off the autopilot long enough to feel some of those feels, as you said, not be scared of them, but to say, that's interesting. What am I going to do with this?
Yeah. You know, you and I, we speak on very different, but complementary things. And, you know, I speak on workplace communication for leaders, but, a lot of it is getting off of autopilot, right?
Absolutely.
So we're consciously communicating, and that's my top suggestion too. You know, I call it practicing the pause and having that.
Oh, I love it.
It can be short, right? Just that moment of reflection, it's not even reflection necessarily, right? It's just that moment of break to tune into how you're feeling and what's going on. And it shifts how we interact with people when we can take that moment. And I love the way you're describing it as a 2 minute break, because it doesn't have to, right? People think, oh, I can't commit to a 15 minute or 30 minute meditation practice. And my experience has been when you can commit to those short moments, you start to see the value and then you want to do more.
So true. I wrote a book in 2012 called Energy Now, Small Steps to an Energetic Life. And that subtitle has been my kind of underpinning of everything that I do since before I started writing that book, Small Steps. Small steps to an energetic life, small steps to a more fulfilling relationship, small steps to better health, small steps to getting whatever it is you want for yourself. But that does start with the small step of getting present to what that thing is. We can't get clear about the right goals if we're not present to where we are right now, because we will set the goals based on somebody else's expectations or what we think we need for ourselves. And then we'll get partway down the track of fulfilling that goal and realize, this is not it. So 2 minute timeout. And I will also say how you do anything is how you do everything. So how you start your day is a game changer. You know, if you can check in with yourself before you check in with the world. So leave that phone, the email, at least until you've done a few minutes of self-reflection. I do it while I'm lying in bed. I'm lying there and, you know, thinking about how the sleep was and what I want to accomplish for the day and how I'm feeling physically, mentally, and emotionally. Before I, you know, get up. And then when I go downstairs, my phone is downstairs. I don't have it in my room. And then, you know, get on with the day, however it looks. Because even then, if your day goes off the rails, if you're chaotic from the moment your feet hit the ground, at least you've given yourself those few moments to just check in with yourself before you check in with the world.
I like that. That's great advice. So listen, I would love for you to share where everyone can pick up a copy of this book. So I sat down with it. I'm going to be honest. I sat down with the intention of skimming it to have a sense of what it was about and read the entire thing in 2 evenings.
Yay!
I highly recommend it. And can you let everyone know where they can get a copy?
We are smack dab in the middle of pre-order campaign right now. So you can go to successenergybook.com. And you can see all the lovely pre-order bonuses that you'll get if you buy one copy or 5 copies or 20 copies or more, all sorts of fun stuff. And you know, even just one copy, I'm really proud of it, of the information, and I'm hoping that it'll change some lives. So successenergybook.com. I'd love, if anybody has any questions, you can also reach out to me at hello@michellecederberg.com.
Great. Thank you. So we'll obviously put a note in the show notes so you can find that easily. And I think so, Michelle hadn't referenced this, but this was written before COVID, but is, I find, just all the much more pertinent now with everything going on. So I really encourage you to go over and check that out. And we'll leave a link also to Michelle's website in the show notes. So thanks so much for joining us today and sharing your success energy equation with us, because I think it's a topic that we all need to be focusing on a little bit more in our lives.
Thank you. I have loved chatting with you.
And for everybody listening, of course, thanks for taking time out of your day today to listen to us, whether you're, like Michelle said, in the kitchen listening, or you've taken a moment to sit down and enjoy this podcast on its own. If anyone is looking for support for their leaders in refining their leadership communication skills in order to elevate team performance, you can find my contact info also in the show notes. So thanks for listening. It's Lindsay LaPaquette and Michelle Cederberg signing off for now. Bye, everyone.
You've been listening to the Workplace Communication Podcast with Lindsay LaPaquette. If you've enjoyed this episode, please share and also leave a rating and review on iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, or wherever you're listening. If your organization is looking to invest in elevating team performance by refining leadership communication skills, you can find more information about Lindsay's coaching, speaking, and consulting by visiting lindsaylapaquette.com. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.